This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is an iFanboy special edition, Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. Welcome to the special edition iFanboy show, Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. I'm Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with the Animated Brain Trust, Paul Montgomery.
Mayhem.
And Ryan Haupt.
Hello.
That's an old one.
We're here to talk about, Mayhem, we're here to talk about the, we were discussing this before, the 30th release, but the 28th full-length film in the DC Universe Animated Original Series, Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. And Paul, we didn't even consider the Batman 66 release.
That's right.
That would make it the 31st release in the 29th. I don't know, whatever. There's been a lot of them.
We've been doing this for a while.
2007.
I mean, and if you think, like, how many come out per year, and it's not that many, like...
two or three, yeah.
We've been doing this for a while.
So we'll be talking about The Judas Contract. There'll be spoilers if you haven't seen it, although if you're at all familiar with the story, you won't be spoiled all that much. So what's interesting about this film, before we get going, is that, and people, long-time listeners will know this, when they originally announced this line, back in 2006, I believe, was the original announcement.
Superman Doomsday came out September of 2007.
Right, which means so, they announced it. I went to a panel on it at WonderCon in 2007, so that would have been early in the year. WonderCon was in the... So, anyway, the point is, when they originally announced the line, it included Superman Doomsday, Justice League: The New Frontier, and the third film was going to be Teen Titans: The Judas Contract. And it never happened because Justice League: The New Frontier tanked, and they got scared about doing quote-unquote fringe characters, so they went right back to a Batman film, then did Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, back to Superman, Batman, and then on and on and on. So it's interesting to think about what that film would have been had it been one of the originals, because it wouldn't have been this one.
Yeah.
In the intervening years, you had that Teen Titans Go cartoon or whatever it was called that was very popular, and this obviously borrows a lot from that. And I found myself watching this wondering what would have been. I would love to have read the script for that, just
yes,
to know what, how different it would have been, because,
or at least a treatment or something or whatever form
right.
It was in.
And this is based on the classic Wolfman and Perez era all new Teen Titans, the Judas Contract being the most famous story of them all. And it's funny, I wonder if young listeners or young comic readers know that there was a time in the 80s when Teen Titans was the second most popular book in all of comic land. It jockeyed with Uncanny X-Men. I almost said Uncanny Avengers, Uncanny Inhumans. The third choice was X-Men, which is sad. It was jockeying with Uncanny X-Men to be the most popular book in comics. It changed a lot of things. This realistic take on teen superheroes in the 80s was a market changer. And
not for its whole run.
No.
But this was like the peak of that. And I was reading up on some of this earlier, just as a refresher on some of the characters that were involved, because they take some liberties here in terms of like roster and there were a lot of parallels and a lot of things that felt like, this is very reactionary to Uncanny X-Men at the time. Like, Terra was introduced right around the time that Kitty Pryde was introduced.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's the way that they work DC Marvel even to this day, you know, is they've got something popular. We're going to find a version of that. I mean, that's how superhero comics have been since going back to the 60s when the Justice League was popular, so the Marvel started to make a super team of their own.
And then you can even flip it. This has Deathstroke the Terminator in it, and you know, Marvel's got Deadpool. And I had to chuckle a bit at the size of Deathstroke's feet in this, particularly in an action sequence that I think we're going to talk about. He's got tiny little feet. When they're not cropped off by the bottom of the frame, which is interesting.
But. So neither of you have read the original story?
I think I read like the first issue of it. I never ended up finishing it, but I am familiar with the story.
And I started reading Teen Titans when Geoff Johns took over in the early 2000s.
I did read that as well.
Sorry, Connor. I know I'm like hurting you with these words right now.
Normally I would. Yes, I am hurt. However,
I know it well enough to know, like, where's Jericho?
They collect these books, guys. In fact, they did the whole Wolfman Perez run in a series of Omnibus.
Yes.
You know when my birthday is.
That's true. There are many reasons why this was one of the most famous stories. Not just the Terra story, not just the big reveal that she was a traitor, but also this was the story in which Nightwing became Nightwing. And he gave up being Robin.
Not in this costume.
No. But there's a lot.
He's in a much better costume. Sweet, sweet lapels.
Let's talk about the movie, because I can go on and on about the.
We could start with this prologue. That's really kind of fun. Which is, it's really interesting because it was like, wait, this is the cast,
I took notes during this movie, and I left them in the couch in my apartment. I was like, where are my notes? Because I had notes.
All right, Paul. Let's just talk about the Nightwing's old lapels while Connor gets his notes.
Are you going back to your apartment? Is no, that what's happening right now?
Is miles away from where I am right now. So
don't give out your address. Don't dox yourself.
So
on the podcast.
Prologue. Yes, the prologue. Continue.
So there's this prologue, and it features the earliest iteration of the Teen Titans, and actually them meeting Starfire for the first time.
Right.
And a sweet dune buggy.
So we've got Dick Grayson as Robin. We've got Speedy.
Bumblebee.
Is that her name?
Okay, yeah, Bumblebee. And Changeling. And
Kid Flash.
Kid Flash, yeah.
Changeling and Beast Boy are the same person.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And he's first starting up his Twitter account, one of those Law & Order SVU versions. It's like Tweetster or something. Tweetster. It's not exactly Twitter, but yeah, it's that. And so they're driving around. The thing I thought here that was kind of interesting, I thought it was cool to do a time jump in here.
Yeah.
But also, I thought it was a bit of a wasted opportunity. You could have done something stylistically here to separate it.
Mm-hmm.
Just historically, which is something that they did a little bit of even in the New Frontier feature, and I'm sure they've done it in some of these other ones, but it's a little bit jarring. You get the title card and then the time jump. It would have been interesting to do the prologue in like a little bit of more of a throwback kind of style.
Yeah, although I have to say, I did love the cold open. It was great. I would totally watch that show. And I get it. That's basically it. It was like watching Young Justice.
It is like Young Justice because it's even like Speedy. The characterization there is very
similar
much
team
pilot.
And similar dynamic. Yeah,
yeah.
Let's talk about the costume because Ryan brought it up. I actually really liked this version of the original Robin suit that they do here.
They did like a weird. He had like almost a tunic situation going on.
It's a hybrid of Damian and Dick's original suit. So he had the yellow cape. He was wearing Damian's tunic. He had the gloves, and it looked like you smush together the original Robin suit and the Damian suit. And it makes sense in that context. So then it becomes interesting that Damian's wearing sort of a version of Dick's suit. And it's much better than whatever garbage they've been putting out in the New 52 when they do flashbacks to the original Robin. I just really liked the look of it. If you're going to have to update it, this was an interesting way to do it.
If you're
going
to do a Robin and it can't be Tim, and you're just going to gloss over his
yeah, I know, right?
Now even Jason gets more love than Tim these days. But.
Did Dick use the Eskrima sticks before he became Nightwing? I always thought that was something he picked up as Nightwing.
Not really. Not in the comics.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He was just in hand-to-hand fighting. Tim brought in the weaponry, mostly. Dick mostly just punched people.
and kick them, and then also dazzle them with his charm and beauty. This was fun. So they find Starfire, who's been attacked by her. You know, she's on the run from her family.
I love that her name and her planet are both foods. Mm-hmm. Coriander and tamarind. You can make a delightful marinade.
She's sort of the Wonder Woman character in the way they portray her here.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to the way that the Justice League comes across Wonder Woman in the Tim cartoons.
Yeah, she's a little bit fish out of water, like, you know, isn't entirely assimilated into, you know, like human cultures.
Yeah, the badass warrior, she's taller than everybody.
Mm-hmm.
She can destroy you, but she's also like the nicest person in the room. Like, it's exactly. She's a very Wonder Woman. I don't think I ever truly understood how close she is to Wonder Woman until watching this movie, which is interesting.
I didn't think of it that way, but you're absolutely right. This is how they would portray Wonder Woman elsewhere. And in her absence, yeah, she definitely fills that role, and she's definitely the compassion of the team, and really cool to see her as the leader. And it was cool to see, jumping ahead a little bit, just to see the day-to-day like interactions of the Titans, like how, you know, what they're doing, you know, in their off hours.
That's always been the appeal of the Titans, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They aren't just superheroes, they're teens living together. So you get all the teen drama that you would get in a Beverly Hills 90210 or whatever. Which is true. You put a bunch of teenagers who are all super, it's like the Olympic Village in T form, right? You bunch of people who are all very attractive and fit and young, and you get a lot of relationships and a lot of hormones and things.
Plus Beast Boy.
I really like this movie.
I think it was fun.
I had a great time watching it. I know I love the Teen Titans, and I know I'm a mark for the Teen Titans, but I thought they did it well, and it's even paining me to say that a movie that involved Damian I enjoyed. But I actually didn't even hate Damian in it.
He wasn't front and center, and I think he was used, like in a teen setting, it actually works. You know, like Batman, in his interactions with Damian that we've seen in these animated movies, because this is like his fifth or sixth appearance or something like that. It's been a while, but we don't get like a voice as the viewer who is irritated with Damian. Like Batman's very patient with him, and so to have other characters that are around him and be like this, you know, this kid's a snob, and you know, just like when Dick is talking to him, that relationship comes across really well. Like the Morrison stuff that we had when Dick was Batman for a while.
Right.
So that dynamic, I think, really shines through. And to have him with other kids, you know, his age or older, I think is
and they don't put up with his bullshit either. Raven's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, and I love Raven in this and the previous one, which was sort of her kind of starring role. Yeah, the stuff with Trigon, and I think she's a nice balance to someone like Damian or to Beast Boy in particular. They have a nice, this is a nice roster.
It's fun because, you know, Damian likes to think that he's like a dark, brooding badass, but then it's like there's a girl with a demon in her forehead sitting next to you, Damian. Like, you're not that hardcore.
Yeah, absolutely. She can summon a beast. So the lineup post the time jump after the cold open. Team's led by Starfire. Now she's growing up. It's 5 years later. That Beast Boy, who's now Changeling or whatever. Do they ever call him by his code name in the movie?
No, they always just call him Gar.
You've got Blue Beetle. You got Jaime Reyes. You have Raven, and you have Damian. Am I missing anyone? And then Dick shows up to sort of mentor the team.
Tara is the newest.
Obviously, Tara is there as well. She's the newest member of the team.
So who's missing from the story, from the source
Cyborg.
Material? Cyborg. Was Jericho still around at that point?
Jericho and Cyborg are the two main that are missing from the story. And I don't remember if Wonder Girl was...
Yeah, I was going to say, had Donna showed up yet?
Yeah, well, I mean, Donna's the original member. New Teen Titans, Wonder Girl, I think she was there.
There are a ton of New Teen Titans characters.
Yeah.
I was just looking over the list, like Core and all kinds of...
But when you think of Wolfman Perez, you think of Starfire, you think of Raven, you think of Robin, you think of Cyborg, you think of Jericho, and Wonder Girl's a big part of it.
Kid Flash, was he still around?
No, not really.
They added Impulse eventually.
He was there in the beginning. He actually quit. There's a great cover that I always coveted as a kid, and I think I finally got it as an adult. It was Wally and Dick walking away in their costumes strewn about in the foreground. So he quit in the same time that Dick quit becoming Robin. It was a big major traumatic event in the time for me.
For you.
Those are the ones you really miss. You know, Blue Beetle's a new addition for this version. But other than that, it's a similar looking lineup. And so then the story is that they're fighting Hive, who's being led by Brother Blood, who I feel like the journalists in the DC are really doing a bad job, because someone who says their name is Brother Blood and they run a cult is someone to look into more frequently. But they're fighting.
Well, he asked him. He flat out, you know, was asking him about his suspicious behaviors, and that's why he got straight up murdered.
And so then, but in the background, they're being stalked by Deathstroke the Terminator, who only a few of us still call Deathstroke the Terminator. I don't think they're even allowed to call him the Terminator anymore.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was a... the thing was, as a kid, he was called the Terminator. But then I think there was legal issues with the movies, and they started calling him more by Deathstroke. But
doesn't the character predate? Or is it right around the same time?
Yeah, it just depends on who has the copyright, honestly.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Slade.
So they're being stalked by Deathstroke, who we find out has a mole on the team in the form of Terra, and that becomes an issue. So one of the things that was really shocking at the time, and still is today, is that one of the reveals in the comic story was that not only was Terra a mole, but she was involved with Deathstroke, and she was, you know, a young teenager, and he was an old white-haired man, and that was always uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Still is in this movie.
Well, here they sort of play it like she wants a relationship.
Yes.
He's holding her off, but it's still, they really did ride that line. And it's supposed to be uncomfortable. It's not supposed to be like we're celebrating this relationship, but they did sort of play it like he's manipulating her to get what he wants, but he's not interested in her in any way.
And there's the reveal on that in the movie. It's like if people don't know that that's kind of like comes out of nowhere, like they don't really telegraph it. I mean, at least the sexual relationship.
Right.
I mean, you know, she comes out in like negligee and, you know, heavy makeup and is being very aggressive to start a physical relationship. And he's saying, no, we got to concentrate. We got to deal with this, you know, this contract we've got first. And I think, appropriately unsettling. Yep. and creepy to watch. And the arc that they were able to give her, I mean, she was introduced in the last one at the very end.
Right.
But this was something in the comics that built out over like a year.
It would have felt more powerful if they had done another Teen Titans movie where she was just a regular team member the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, given the space that they had, and this was one of the longer ones, I think.
84 minutes. It was almost 90 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, even still, I think the emotional payoff is still pretty well done for what they tried to do. They bit off a lot in this one. I mean, Blue Beetle's got, you know, his whole story. Got Gar, who's attracted to Terra. And
to the point of being like a serial harasser.
Yeah.
Leave her the hell alone, Gar. Come on.
Yeah, but that's like schoolyard stuff, though. He's not an adult. These aren't adults in an office. These are kids who are trying to figure it out.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he's not like, you know, disguising himself as a fly, and he's like buzzing around her face, but he's not like disguising himself as a fly and like, you know, watching her at night or something. Like, it's not like straight up stalking. It's just,
it's like pulling her pigtails.
Yeah, he's corrected on it, you know, and it's immaturity. It's not, you know, he's not a bad guy.
What's interesting about this movie is that it's sort of plot light in that, yeah, they're trying to break down Hive, but it's not really a preoccupation. It doesn't really happen until the end. And yeah, they're being stalked by Deathstroke, but mostly it's about the personal relationships. It's about Dick and Corey moving in together. It's about Gar trying to figure out his feelings for Terra and her trying to figure out her feelings for everybody. It's about Jaime trying to figure out where he fits in a world where his scarab is very hostile toward everybody around him, and also having a crush on the girl at the soup kitchen he'd volunteered. Like, it's more about all their relationships than it is really about taking down a supervillain. And that,
it's about Nightwing. It's about Dick and Corey having to combine their weapons collections. We've all been there.
Right, exactly.
Move in with a significant other.
For me, that might be why I really enjoyed it, because it felt very much like more like a drama than an action movie.
So I actually think Jaime's subplot was my favorite subplot of the movie.
Interesting. It was good.
I liked it. I mean, I liked that, you know, I liked his struggle with his family, you know, not being able to go to his little sister's quinceañera, and then realizing that he could do good for the community by working in a soup kitchen in addition to fighting bad guys. Like, I like those kind of superhero stories.
Yeah, that's
some of my favorite issues of Batman is just when Bruce Wayne is walking around Wayne Industries, like, helping out employees and stuff, and, like, showing that, hey, being a billionaire is also useful when you're not just punching people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to see the different reactions to him wanting to do this, like, Tara's just not into it, like, this is lame. But, like, how much of that is, you know, her baggage and stuff and just an excuse to get out of there,
right?
Because she's having this trauma of very grisly stuff happening to her. And we haven't really, I mean, we've alluded to the sexual stuff, but this is a very mature
yep.
film while also having those lighter moments.
There's a lot of language, more so than normal in this one.
Yeah, it's sort of at either end of the spectrum for DC animated stuff, because it's not, I mean, we've seen really intensely dark and violent stuff from them, particularly with some of the Batman stuff, but that's like, it's just that. This has that stuff plus like Beast Boy turning into, you know, a seal.
Right.
There's a lot, it's, you know, the whole spectrum, and that's kind of interesting. And, you know, so I thought it was really ambitious. I kind of, you know, I thought about Young Justice a lot, obviously, you know, from seeing Speedy and everything and seeing these characters in general. So that got me thinking, like, I kind of wish something like Judas Contract would really benefit from being, you know, an arc of a series.
Yeah. They did that in the original cartoon, but they're the old Teen Titans cartoon, I believe. And again, I've never seen it, but what I've been told, they did that, an arc or something on this story in that cartoon.
Yes, they did. They did. Not Teen Titans Go. This is just the one that was just called Teen Titans with the... Yeah.
Did you see it?
Years ago, I didn't rewatch it in anticipation of this or anything. But yeah, I mean, it was very similar. Like, they set up Tara as a new member of the team, but also hinted that her having a subterfuge relationship with Deathstroke. And Deathstroke was, like, the main villain of that series. So It was part of a much longer arc. And Deathstroke definitely at least as far as I remember in that show, Deathstroke had a real mat on for Robin and really wanted to bring down Robin as leader of the team.
Yeah.
But it was good. I mean, that show itself was, I thought, a really good adaptation and molding of styles and teams in itself, too. So,
well, this is the seminal story. When you think of Teen Titans, you think of Judas Contract. So It's cool to see it being done in different ways and different formats. It's really ultimately about betrayal, right, Judas? So you don't need the sex element of it. It's just an element that makes it creepier. All it is that a member of their team has been spying on them the whole time for Deathstroke is really the most important aspect of it.
Do you feel like any particular thread in this was the weak link?
Other than the Kevin Smith scene at the end?
I mean, that
didn't
was
like
weird.
That. And then, you know, I get that it's like part of Corey's legitimate characterization in the comics, but like, I didn't need her to misinterpret every single statement as talking about her having sex with Dick. I got a little old for me.
There's only two instances of that.
Yeah, they were both awkward and weird enough that I was like, I don't need any more of that. Thanks. I didn't find them particularly funny in either instance, I guess.
Well, you are approved.
Yep, that's me.
So I guess it's a loaded question, because for me it was, I think, the Brother Blood stuff, I feel like, gets kind of short shrift.
I didn't care about the hive.
To the point where I was like, whoa, what happened when he makes his like final transformation and is in this crazy battle? When he's in more of like the classic Brother Blood, you know, thing, and it's not just a cult. And I feel like that's a really interesting character and interesting villain for like 2017, and could be very interesting if you actually play up the cult part of it. Right. And aside from seeing like a video feed of like his speech to his followers and them chanting and, you know, pumping their fists and stuff, like, we kind of only get it from I'm blanking on the character's name.
Mother Mayhem.
Yeah.
Mother Mayhem. That's why I made the Mayhem joke in the beginning. I can't believe I forgot. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, Mother Mayhem. When she turns up again, I was like, oh, right, her. She's in this movie.
They were sort of, I don't want to say a device, but they really, I mean, I honestly can't even remember much that happened.
It's really kind of like when the Wrecking Crew shows up in comics, like they're just there to be bodies, to
beat on,
you know, be a threat. But I felt that like the portrayal was very interesting. And I think if they, you know, could have expanded on that more, like, and not be vying with this much more like, whoa, what's going on here stuff with Deathstroke and Tara. I think there was potential there, but
yeah.
Connor, how closely did this follow the comic?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it's the main thing in the comic is that Tara's revealed to be a traitor and she's been spying on them for Deathstroke, and she's Deathstroke's quote unquote lover, and they have to defeat him. And I'm pretty sure Hive was in it too. It's been a couple years since I read it. The broad strokes are there.
You know, Hive was definitely a major
Hive was a major presence throughout the entire run of New Teen Titans. The broad strokes are pretty close. I still would like to know how closely it would have hewn to the comics if they had done it originally. Like, cause back then they were trying to be pretty close. I wonder if you would have seen a pixie-booted Robin. I wonder if you would have had Cyborg and Jericho
I did kind of miss Cyborg, but I know they have to like make him a Justice League guy now.
Yeah, for some reason I thought he was going to show up.
Yeah, it's weird seeing DC Animation not pushing Cyborg. Like, DC has been very about putting Cyborg into things.
Right.
Even when he's not an original character from a source.
Because he was in the Justice League Teen Titans movie, obviously, because he's a member of Justice League, but didn't he switch sides to the Teen Titans?
That's an interesting dynamic.
I misremembered the trailer, maybe, but for some reason I thought he was going to show up later, and I kept waiting for him to show up. He never did.
It'd be cool to see classic Cyborg, too, like in the white, like ridiculous cyborg costume, with the white trunks.
Well, because that's when he's actually a cyborg, as opposed to now, where he's basically robot with human face.
Yeah.
Now, did you watch all the way through the post-credit scene?
Yes,
well, I didn't see the post-credits, okay. But what happens?
So we see in the middle of the movie, Hive is showing off their life-sucking technology, right? Where they put these people into a machine and it channels their energy into this other dude and becomes really strong and indestructible unless he gets shot in the head, apparently. The guy looked exactly like Jericho. He had the
critical bomb. That was my question. Not being like an old-school Teen Titans reader, I still recognize that character. Yeah. And, you know, he has the blonde, curly, tight curly hair, kind of like Justin Timberlake style. Yeah.
And he looks exactly like him, and then he's sort of thrown away in the movie. He's shot in the head, and then you're seeing him again. I thought, well, is that just a bizarre sort of reference to Jericho?
That did legitimately surprise me, because I recognize the character even not having read this original comic story.
Right, and Jericho is Deathstroke's son. That's also what made the story more powerful, is because his son is on the Titans, too. So that was actually, if you talk about how close, that was actually a really big missing element to the story.
Mm-hmm.
The post-credit scenes is that dude opens his eyes and his head heals. I don't know what that means. I don't know what they're doing with that. I don't know if it's still meant to be Jericho. I don't know. Didn't really make any sense. I don't know if they're planning on doing another Teen Titans movie, because they ended the last one with the Terra appearance, and they did another. I don't know, but it was a weird way to go. That was maybe when you asked earlier, the only things that kind of was weird, that to me that was the weirdest part was this weird Jericho, not Jericho.
I don't think these movies need post credit sequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just being grumpy, but I feel like we're on the tail end of that trend.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I finally got to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and they had like five of those, and there was a sixth planned one, and so we kind of reached the height of that.
Trolling.
Yeah.
But, like, James Gunn was just laughing.
I enjoyed those though, because they were placed well. Like, you didn't have to sit through a bunch of credits that were just credits. Like, it actually, they spaced them out so that you got a nice treat for waiting the whole time. But anyways, that's another topic.
Overall thoughts. I really liked it. I liked the last one, the Justice League Dark one. I liked the Batman 66 one. So this is three in a row now where I've really enjoyed them.
I wanted to bring up, we haven't talked a lot about the performances.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Oh, Miguel Ferrer.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was going with this.
In one of his two final roles, it's a toss-up between this and Albert Rosenfeld in Twin Peaks. But
yeah,
really, really sad. He died of throat cancer, and you could hear it a little bit in his voice. He's a terrific voice actor, and he's a terrific Deathstroke.
It's a great performance. It's not like you, Ryan, you mentioned Deathstroke in the series before and being more of like an arch villain kind of thing with a vendetta against Robin. This felt like a person, not a great person, but it didn't just feel like a Disney villain, which is more what the guy playing Brother Blood did. And that's Star-Lord's grandfather and Logan's dad from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Playing that role, and I thought
Greg
he did well
Henry, in that,
but that was that's the choice, but I think it was really cool. Like, it made Deathstroke feel more dangerous, because this felt like a person who's not necessarily just a mustache twirling
he's terrific villain. Miguel Ferrer is always terrific, but he's a terrific voice actor, and that doesn't always translate when screen actors come on. We've talked about this before, but the guy who played Jim Gordon and whatever, let's not get into it, but the point is, not Jim Gordon, a Batman in Year One. Anyway, I'm not slacking off Bryan Cranston.
The guy from Gotham.
Yeah, he's great. And I was really sad because I was like, man, he's so good. He's such a good actor.
What I thought was interesting, when he takes his mask off.
Double mask?
I felt like that character model, the design of the face and the goatee, looked like an actor named Brian James, who is the first replicant in Blade Runner.
Yes.
And Leon, I think, and then the general in Fifth Element, and he has that same goatee. Because we've got like a weak chin and a long bridge of his nose. And I was like, that looks just like that dude. And I think he died, but I think that actor passed away in like 99. Yeah, and so I was like, because I wasn't sure if he was alive or dead at that point. And I was like, I wonder if they designed it around him and was going to have him play it. But
in general, the character models they use for these in continuity stories, the ones that are always all connected, they all have long noses, and it kind of is distracting. And I mean, they're not pointy. They go down
the bridge of his nose.
They go down lower on the face than a regular nose goes, and
right.
I kind of get distracted by it.
It felt so specific to me to like that. I was like, that totally looks like that dude. Like it was like an Uncanny Valley kind of thing. But I really like the performance. I like the design of Deathstroke. Yes. The little feet were funny.
Although I kept laughing when he took his mask off and he'd have another mask on underneath it.
Right.
Every time he did it, I would laugh.
I also wanted to mention the fight sequence, Deathstroke and Dick Grayson just in street clothes.
Yeah.
I thought was really good. It's a silly thing, but when Dick gets tossed out the window and he catches the ledge and his shoulder goes out.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen so many action cartoons all our lives where a character falls off something or like grabs a cliff and like they're fine. But like it was just cool to see, especially with a character like Deathstroke, who's all about precision strikes and everything and just like dismantling his opponents. I thought it was cool, that attention to detail, and then Dick grabbing the board and turning around catching the throwing knife and all that stuff.
This was really well directed. This is Sam Liu. He's done a bunch of these.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with the action. I was really impressed with some of the staging of the shots.
But it was also, you know, you're talking about the continuity of it all, Paul. Like, he also puts his shoulder back in once he is free from the scenario.
Right. When
we see him knock his shoulder back.
Martin Riggs style.
Exactly. Yeah. It was very much a Lethal Weapon-esque.
Also, I did laugh. In that fight scene, they fight. And then at the end of it, Deathstroke just shoots him in the chest and he falls in the water. And he comes back out of the water and opens his shirt and pulls a giant block of wood out of his shirt. And I was like,
yeah,
wait a second. He had a giant piece of wood in his shirt the whole time. How did Deathstroke not see that? How did it stay in place? Like,
well, you saw when he used it, right? Like, he picked it up in the marketplace.
Like, it was a giant piece of wood.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just making sure you knew that they, like, they at least, like, Chekhov's gun.
It was great, but it was like, it was just so thick.
It is.
Deathstroke would have seen this giant protruding thing in his chest.
I don't know if that would save you from a bullet.
And maybe, it depends on the caliber. I don't know about bullets.
Theodore Roosevelt's Bible saved him, but...
I thought this was terrific. I thought the voice talent was great. I thought this was super fun. It's great drama, character-wise. The action was... I really thought this was terrific. This is one of the better ones we've seen in a while. For me, anyway.
Christina Ricci, real good as Tara.
Yep.
I don't know if is dead or not.
I think she did. I think she died.
Like, she gets unburied and then opens her eyes and then dies.
It's kind of like Duke at the end of the G.I. Joe movie, where they can go either way.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I felt like.
I feel like she's dead. She served her purpose as a character. They replace her with Wonder Girl at the end.
Right. I thought that was rude of Kevin Smith to be like, so is Wonder Girl, is she replacing Tara? And I was like, that's not cool. You didn't say that.
Like, you're
she's just the new person on the team. Not a replacement.
It was good. I would love to see another one of these with this team and with Wonder Girl. That'd be interesting. I think this is a super fun group.
More Kevin Smith podcasts.
No more of those.
I've been mostly effusive this podcast. I actually thought this was very boring.
Wow.
I've been bored through most of it. I'm trying to be positive and say nice things because there were definitely aspects of it I liked, but I had a hard time staying focused.
This is fair.
Remember when Ryan used to have terrible opinions all
there
the time?
There was one that me and you like a thing, and then Ryan, or like we didn't like one, and then Ryan really liked
Suicide
it.
Suicide Squad.
The Arkham one. It was the Arkham one.
It's Arkham, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that just shows your opinion is suspect.
People should get a full range of opinions when they listen to the Animated Brain Trust. We wouldn't be a good brain trust if we just agreed on everything.
I know. That's just, everyone just knows you're the one with the dumb opinions. That's all.
I'm not the one who's angry all the time, but just sometimes. And it's not that I didn't enjoy it. I just wasn't that engaged by it. And yeah.
Well, maybe you'll like the next one, which I watched the featurette on, which is Batman and Harley Quinn, which comes out soon. It comes out summer 2017. And I also like to apologize for how late the show was. This is my fault. I've been traveling like four of the last 6 weeks, and I haven't been able to even watch the movie until today, let alone talk about it. So the next one's coming up soon, Batman and Harley Quinn, and it looks awesome. It's a full-on Bruce Timm movie. He plotted it. He storyboarded it. He was fully involved in the whole process.
So not Paul Dini, but...
No, he wasn't Paul Dini, but what happened was, according to the PR and the featurette, is that Mike Carlin told Bruce Timm the next one they were going to do was going to be a Harley Quinn movie because she had so much heat on her from Suicide Squad movie. And he said, then I want to do it. Right. And he did everything. Handed the storyboards and the plot to a writer and, you know, oversaw the entire project. They showed him in the booth with the voice actor. So it's a full-on Tim movie. It's Tim-style art. It's the voice actors, except for Harley Quinn from the original series. I don't even know the last time Lauren Lester did Dick Grayson, but here he is back as Dick Grayson. It's like a 48 hours type road movie with Batman and Nightwing needing Harley Quinn's help to stop Poison Ivy and the Floronic Man from destroying the world. The clips they showed and the talent behind it just looks terrific. I'm so excited for it.
And it's one of the actresses from Big Bang Theory, and I did see some of the promotional stuff, and I think she's good.
She's fine. The little bit of a voice, you know, it's fine. She's doing the Brooklynese, you know, it's fine. It's not bad, but the Batmobile is the animated series designed Batmobile. Like, it's full on. He said it's not necessarily in the world, but it's pretty much in the world of that universe.
Right.
I think people will be excited for it. Now, the real interesting thing is they haven't announced officially the next one yet, but they usually are too ahead on these.
That's true.
The rumor is that it's Watchmen. That's the rumor.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I don't need that.
So we'll see.
It would make sense. I mean, they're very much into Watchmen these days.
Still DC's biggest money-making property of all their properties. It makes them the most money every year. So it makes sense that they would do an animated version of it. My fingers are crossed that the next one that we're going to hear about is like Rebirth, and then we can get away from these New 52 versions. But we'll see.
Just like Rebirth, or?
Doing a version of what's currently happening in DC with a DC Rebirth. And also would make sense.
Like a Justice League story or like an individual character?
Well, like, you know, the same way they did Flashpoint, you know? Like, the world is fucked up and the Flashes are at the center of it. And it would make sense to do Watchmen and then do Rebirth because of the Watchmen characters. Anyway.
And then do The Button.
Right, which is a terrific crossover. I'd be happy with that.
I'm actually enjoying The Button. That's been the most surprising comic of the year for me, is that I'm reading and liking it.
Yeah, it's great. So we'll see if that's actually happening or not after Batman and Harley Quinn. But we'll be back for Batman and Harley Quinn whenever, quote-unquote, summer 2017 is. They haven't announced the release date as of this recording. But you can go to fanboy.com and you can talk about Teen Titans, the Judas contract there, or what your thoughts on that were, or what your thoughts are looking forward in the line. I'm very excited about Batman and Harley Quinn. We'll be back for that one.
And are you team Ryan or team Connor? Was this great or was this kind of boring?
I give it a B-.
Interesting.
That's where I'm at.
I'm going B+.
I'll probably go C+. Pretty close.
For my wish list, I think they should do something with Wonder Woman.
You think they would. They're usually on these media tie-ins. They re-released the original one, and that was a big ad in the beginning of this DVD, was for the re-release of the original cartoon, which is terrific. Still one of the best ones.
That was really good. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, we all enjoyed that one.
I recently rewatched it, actually, and it still holds up really well.
The last sequence of that with Cheetah in it is one of the most beautifully animated things they've ever done. Yeah. It's so good.
So if you've never seen it, go watch that one. That's
absolutely great. But they should do like they've got Rucka's year one sort of Wonder Woman story. They should do that. But
that's what that one was. It was a year one story.
They should do that other version of it. Or like if they're doing Rebirth, so do the Green Arrow, because that was a good Rebirth title. That was a big surprise.
I'm just saying they should use this opportunity to stay with the comics and restart these movies or whatever. Do something with it. Before we go, guys, do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, I do a podcast called Science Sort Of, where we drink beer and talk about science. We just had a really good episode come out about Tasmanian devil face cancer, if you guys are familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
So there's been some really cool research that's been done recently talking about their evolution of their immunity and changes in reproductive behavior based on the face cancer, which is really cool. We had a cancer expert on to talk about that. And I was also recently on a podcast called Out There, which is a podcast about the outdoors, where I talk about my reluctance to go do outdoorsy things, but how I force myself to go do it anyway. So I climb a mountain and podcast about it.
You're always outside.
I know, but this is the behind the scenes of what's going on in my head when I'm out doing it.
So you're just miserable all the time.
No, it's just I have a high activation energy and suffer from outdoor imposter syndrome. So if you want to hear me a little essay about that, the podcast is called Out There. It's hosted by my friend Willow Belden, and you can find it on iTunes.
I am interested in both of those. So I'm starting up some Fuzzy Typewriter podcasting again. There is one on the feed. If you go look for it in iTunes, our buddy Brett White and I talked about the podcast S-Town, which just kind of rocked my world. I thought it was just an amazing project from the makers of Serial and This American Life. So if you like podcasts, check out that and then our podcast about it. and then actually tomorrow, I think I'll be recording a podcast with Dave about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which I finally got to see.
So check out those shows. We'll be back next time. In the meantime, you can listen to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast every week. We talk about the week's comics. And until whenever summer 2017 is, the Anime Brain Trust will be back. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Ryan.
Go outside, Ryan.
It's snowing real hard right now. I've been outside a couple of times today, and it wasn't great.